Some people like to mix chemicals to save lives. Others like the nitty-gritty of using customer feedback to create valuable products. There are also a few who have hanged their lab coats to join the world of meetings, MVPs, and go-to-market strategies. In this captivating episode, we sit with Joel Kojo Anaman, a pharmacist by training, now working as a product manager in one of Ghana's leading pharmaceutical services, on his incredible journey. His story teaches us that life is full of adventures and taking chances is often essential to seize new opportunities. Joel reminds us that with hard work and a commitment to learning, anyone can overcome challenges and thrive in a different field. Enjoy today's episode. This episode is brought to you by Big Spark. Big Spark is the UK's fastest growing data solutions consultancy, translating your business needs into data architecture, strategy, and engineering. Together with their technical partners, they focus on swift and efficient business value delivery. Taking an innovative approach to every challenge, Big Spark is an agile team of over 100 world-class engineers and data scientists pushing the boundaries of what can be achieved with AI, data, software, cloud, and machine learning. To find out how Big Spark can ignite your data solution, visit us at www.bigspark.dev. Big Spark, igniting change through engineering. Hello everyone and welcome to the TechServe podcast, where we navigate today's tech wave one electrifying conversation at a time. I am your host, Raymond Kluche, and today we have our very own Bezos, but this time it's not Jeff, it is Joel. And I've known Joel on social media, both on LinkedIn and Twitter, and he's quite a unique guy. Like, he's just a different guy, very good energy and everything. It was until I think it was later that I got to know a bit about his transition into tech and all that. I was like, you know what, okay, I would like to have this guy. And the funny thing is, we tried to work on something behind the scenes which is similar to what I'm currently doing, but I'll leave that for a different conversation. And I first want to say thank you so much, Joel, for reaching out, and thanks for joining today's episode of the TechServe podcast. I would like you to, you know, go ahead, just give us a short introduction of who you are, what you do, and then we can delve into, you know, the fun bits of today's conversation.
Thank you so much, Raymond. I know we do have something hanging in the background, but that's a conversation for another day. My name is Joel, and Muslim people tell me to introduce myself. I'm in a fix because I have to know which part of myself I'm unveiling. But let's say, basically, I'm a problem solver. So I love solving problems. And currently, I find myself in a spot where every day, every moment, I'm facing problems in the health space, right? And solving them with technology, collaborating with software engineers, product designers, you know, business stakeholders to build amazing products that bring value to retail pharmacies. So that's what currently I'm into now as a senior product manager at M Pharma. But outside that too, I have a career consultancy business called Career Wheel, which focuses on helping professionals tell their most authentic stories to, you know, access different opportunities ranging from jobs to scholarships and what have you. And so I've been in this career coaching bit for, I don't know, for about 8 years, I would say. In terms of education, yes, I have a pharmacy background. I'm a pharmacist. I don't practice actively, but I believe that it all feeds into the kind of value that I'm able to bring as a product manager now. And lastly, I'm building Mandy, which is a product that's supposed to be a career operating system for professionals, especially entry-level or early career graduates. So that sums up who I am and what I do in a professional context.
Charlie, this elevator pitch there, Charlie, I can't match up for. Like, you just went on different You went on different zones, but that's nice. That's nice. Okay, let's delve a little bit into, you know, the your previous profession. It's quite obvious from the title that, you know, you've pivoted from pharmacy to being a product manager, right? But let's look a bit more into you as a pharmacist. When did you know that you wanted to be a pharmacist? I'm sure probably you went down a traditional route, like every person from JHS, and then you went to read science, and then when it came to choosing courses, you probably just chose pharmacy. Did you always know, like, you know, pharmacy was it for me, like I wanted to be a pharmacist, or you probably pushed into my parents because parents like to choose careers for their kids?
Okay, that's an interesting question. And interestingly, I wanted to be a surgeon. Oh. I don't know where I got that from.
Okay.
Yeah, there was this yearning thing, this feeling to be a cardiovascular surgeon. And when I got into high school, I discovered that I wasn't the type who would want to delve into like tons of books, right? Especially when it comes to biology, reading voluminous stuff. I remember at a point even I had an F in biology. Oh, wow. And even physics in high school. But for me, I fell in love with chemistry, right? So it was more like, how can I still work in the health space and still make good use of the chemistry?
Right.
And obviously I got into pharmacy by mistake because I had a different perception. I thought a pharmacist could do everything that a prescriber or a doctor would do. Just that it's more focused on medications. That was my perception, and I had no guidance, right? So after getting into the pharmacy program in University of Ghana, that was when I really discovered that, I mean, that wasn't the case. However, pharmacists have their role to play in the healthcare space. And over time, the role has evolved. There are pharmacists who are prescribing now, but also my interest also evolved along the line. So there was that shift, you know, between being wanting to be a cardiovascular surgeon and looking at something that could make me make a good use of chemistry in the, you know, the healthcare space. And pharmacy was the lowest hanging fruit there. So that's literally what got me to choose pharmacy. Although my dad wanted me to study medicine, my mom was very supportive of my pharmacist ambitions. So that's what spurred me on.
Right. What was life like as a pharmacist?
As a pharmacist, I'll play back to school. I when I discovered that bit of, okay, not all pharmacists can actually prescribe. It's a program that exists in the UK, yada, yada, yada. I told myself that, okay, fine. I mean, I find myself in this amazing profession that gives you a broad range of skill set. You can work in the pharmaceutical industry in terms of producing medicines. You can work in regulatory like FDA, Pharmacy Council, where you regulate standards for the profession or drugs or food or whatnot. You could also work in a community pharmacy. That's like the retail facilities that we find around the pharmacies that we see around in our communities. Or you could work in a hospital. And the interesting thing is that I had a taste of all these things, maybe except regulatory. I had a taste of all these things. And what got me excited was the sales space, the commercial pharmacy space. So by the end of my period of studying in Lagos, I had decided that I wanted to become a medical representative. So basically you work with a multinational company. It could be a local company as well. And you ensure that you're ethically ensuring access to medications and the companies are getting their revenue in return. So you are engaging prescribers, you're engaging stakeholders, like, you know, external stakeholders to ensure that business is going on. So that's where I pitched my intent and decided to break into. So now I'm coming back to your question, life as a pharmacist, right? I just had to give this background.
Yeah. Sure, that's fine. So, we love it. We love it here.
Yeah. So my background as a medical representative, usually my day-to-day involved building strategies around the product lines that I had to promote to healthcare practitioners. It wasn't just doctors, but also pharmacists as well. and ensuring that I was influencing them with facts. I was influencing them with the benefits of these products and how they were going to impact the lives of their patients. So it was basically selling, but ethical selling, and also doing that professionally. And I enjoyed most of it, like that particular phase of my life as a medical representative. This happened for about 3.5 years before I decided to jump into tech. But I'm happy to dive into any specifics if you have any follow-up questions on that.
All right. Like, that is pretty much it. I just wanted to know a little bit about, you know, how life was like, you know, as a pharmacist. Now let's dive into, you know, the part that you talk about, you know, you were jumping into another area. So career switching, you know, it's, I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it's very rare for someone who may seemingly have a path, you know, laid for them. You know, you have a clear path, maybe you go into, you know, maybe do the doctor of pharmacy or become whatever it is, mm-hmm. and then, you know, start cashing out and all that. But then you wake up one day and you go like, nah, I don't want to mix chemicals again to save lives. I want to work in tech. What led you to that place?
Okay. I'll say I was always a curious person, right? Even in my choices of program of study, computer science was part of it, just that maybe because of lack of information, it happened to be at the bottom of the list for me. Oh, I even had telecom engineering. Yeah, okay. I even had telecom engineering for KNUST, and I actually got chosen for telecom engineering in KNUST, but I decided to go study pharmacy in Lagos. So I was really that curious, right? And throughout my schooling, I'll be the guy to troubleshoot stuff for my friends, my colleagues, my lecturers. Right. Even when I was doing my national service, like the deputy head for pharmaceutical services at Kolebu at the time would have issues and would call for me to come around and come troubleshoot stuff. So I love that bit, right? And so I wanted to be in a space where I could innovate, okay? Mm. When you look at all the fields of pharmacy practice, it was the sales field that gives you that big room. I mean, the other fields could give you that big room, but then the sales field gives you the biggest room to innovate, right? Because it's like a business environment. Yes, just that over time, I realized this cycle of some of the companies coming in, like the multinational companies, they'll come in, set up shop, then they sort of fold up after some time, they lay people off, and then they come back again. So it's like a cycle, right? And beyond that, I sort of looked at several amazing people who I knew about even before finishing school, who were filling, like, you know, high leadership roles. And I realized that most of them, even when I became a medical representative for over 3 years, most of them were in these positions, still in these positions. And it was a case of expansion, right? These companies were not like rapidly expanding, creating new opportunities and all of that. So for me, I care so much about growth in my career. I care about autonomy. And one other thing I care about is not having geographical restrictions with regards to. And I was seeing that as a common thing in the medical representative space, like the commercial pharmacy space. And it was even worse with other fields of pharmacy. So, for example, if I'm a hospital pharmacist, a community pharmacist here in Ghana, and I move to, say, the UK, I would have to go through a one-year internship, understand their laws, how they operate around things, and then write their profession. Exam before I become a qualified pharmacist to practice in the UK. And it's the same thing if I move to the US, if I move to Togo, wherever I'm going to go. Some countries may have flexible rules where they can reduce the time spent on, you know, doing your internship and stuff. But for me, I found out to be very, very restrictive. And I wanted to work in a field or in an industry where I could sit anywhere and then work, right? So this was like peak 2019 when I was like really visualizing that kind of life for myself. And so it happened that tech and nonprofit space, these two industries, could give me that opportunity. But I was more leaning towards tech because, yes, I was business biased because I was working in the business field for some time.
Right.
And also, I believe that in the field of tech, you get to innovate more, right? So that influenced my decision to want to, you know, move out of pharmacy into tech. And eventually, like in September 2020, that happened. But then the plan to get to that transitionary phase started somewhere in 2019, September as well, October. Yeah, somewhere around that time.
Okay. So how did you do like how did you make that pivot, you know? Because most of the time people say, oh, I want to start, you know, I want to change careers. I was just even, you know, checking something up. And I don't know if you know Bernard the Magician. Apparently he is, was a top of, you know, his class, electrical engineering, but now he's a magician, right?
Yeah.
People just, you know, get into other industries. But before people get into such, like pivoting from one career to another, some people are always, you know, blank about what to do and how to go about it. I'm just curious about you in terms of your case. I know you went further to read, you know, business and management, or business analytics and management in the UK, right? And management sciences. Yeah. So business analytics and management sciences in the UK. So what steps did you take to properly pivot into the tech space?
Okay. So I thought about building solutions, but I had no competency of the sort. But prior to that, I was volunteering my time with a company called Medirex. So Medirex was building a solution that allows access to medications, right? I wasn't getting paid for it. I didn't have any equity, but for me, it was more like an opportunity to also do something fun, right, outside my work. So I was a medical rep. I was moving around. I had insights. I was engaging pharmacy owners. I was engaging prescribers across board. So I had insights, right? And I was able to gather these insights and share them with the team strategically. Right. So that was a way of more like collecting user feedback. Sometimes you meet people and go like, ah, you're part of the MedRx team. This is not working. That is not working. You ask for details and then you share with the product team. So for me, that was like one side of things, but I was not directly building the product. I was more like in the position of an advisor, and giving them that particular support. And so I had fun doing that. And in 2019, when I really decided to do the transition, I looked at the options. I had applied for several other opportunities too as well, like other fellowships, other innovative challenges. None of them really was successful, right? About five of them, none of them really was successful. So somewhere in August 2019 or September 2019, I came across the Shevlin Scholarship. And yes, the Shevlin Scholarship is open now. So anybody listening to this can go to shevlin.org and then check that out. Shevlin is C-H and then the word evening, right? C-H-E-V-E-N-I-N-G. So the Shevlin Scholarship was is a fully funded scholarship for people leading change, young people leading change in Africa and beyond, right? And when I came across the opportunity, I just saw it as that ticket, that straitjacket ticket for me to break out of my industry. So I chose to use academia to help with that transition journey. Okay, so I saw it as, okay, I get the time to take a break off work, because combining work and transitioning is a tough journey. And shout outs to a lot of people who are doing that, like massive respect to them. I chose the path of wanting to get a scholarship wanting to get into school. And then while I'm in school, I do my transition. And because of scholarship, I also get paid alongside. Right. So that, for me, that was my strategy. And that's not like the single strategy you can use. A lot of people will decide to do a master's because they want to immigrate, some want to transition and all of that. So it's up to, you know, going with whatever works for you. A lot of people are also enrolled in these boot camps recently, and some are doing great with regards to their transition journey. So for me, it was more like taking a break off work, studying for a master's program, which was in the field of tech, most importantly, in the field of tech, and then learning the ropes throughout that process. So that was what got me to put my all into the Chief Newton Scholarship. I remember there was one night I had to spend 12 hours like reworking the whole essay because I wanted it that bad. I really wanted it. And I mean, thank God, I came out successful by the following year. And then by September 2020, I was out there in Southampton studying business analytics and management sciences.
That's nice. That's nice. That's quite a very determined, you know, approach to transitioning. And that goes to say to anyone who is listening, it's easy for you to say you want to do something, but if you don't put in the necessary effort, if you don't, you know, do your research and also make sure you're taking the necessary steps, connecting with the right people, getting, you know, the right advice on how to make your transition, how to successfully transition, you end up, you know, either just being, you know, in a spiral of, you know, events where you're not necessarily making any progress. My boss likes to call it analysis paralysis. Or you just, you know, hit, you know, a roadblock and then you just get frustrated. All right. So that's a good tip there. Hello there, Tech Surfers. I have got some news for you. The Tech Surf Podcast is now on Instagram and LinkedIn. Follow us on Instagram at the Tech Surf Podcast and LinkedIn, the Tech Surf Podcast, to stay up to date on new episodes and to get interactive. Don't forget to like, share, and send us feedback on your favorite episodes and the lessons you've learned. See you soon. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your work as a PM or a product manager. I know sometimes when I say PM, people say project manager, product manager, programs manager. You are a product manager as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
What does your work look like? What does it entail? And what kind of skills do you think gets one to become a PM or a product manager? Let me stay on product manager before I confuse people.
Okay. That's a very good question. And those were some of the things that I considered in the process of my transition. Initially, I thought I wanted to do data science. But I realized that I didn't want to get stuck in the technicalities. I still love the business aspect of things and engaging with other people, just like I was doing in my sales role, because it fits very well with my personality. So that was one of the things that I sort of took into consideration to switch from doing data science, studying data science, and then focus on studying business analytics and management science. So that happened. And in like there was no way I thought about product management as a program, but all I knew was that I wanted to move into the tech space and I wanted to do something that required the use of data to inform business decisions. So that informed my decision at that point. Now, when I started the program, right, I'll say midway through the program, I started thinking about, okay, what next after, right? What next after? I know that the Ghanaian industry, the pharma industry does not make good use of data. And we when I was a medical rep, I remember we destroyed a huge volume of products, right? That if probably we had insights on the market or whatnot, it couldn't have happened. And so those were some of the things that were fueling my decision. But then again, when I started reading about different tech roles, right, I discovered product management. And product management stood out for me, mainly because I was looking at how my previous experiences were going to feed into my current endeavors, like my next step in tech. And that's one thing that a lot of people will probably, you know, overlook when they are when they are trying to break into a space. They tend to forget or throw away their current experience. Someone will tell you that, oh, they are a teacher, and then they are moving into software engineering, so they don't see a match. But the match here is that if you're able to go into an edtech company, you are more likely going to achieve a higher rate of success than starting
anywhere
else. Right. So I had this colleague at church, Yao Malcolm Mensah, who showed me, introduced me to this book, So Good They Can't Ignore You. And that book talks about career capital. So how whatever you do today in the next 5 years, whatever you're doing now, should some way somehow feed into it, even if you pivot. Right. And so I saw it as more like building my career capital, and I was not going to throw my my sales background away, all the ton of skills that I've built over the period. I was not going to throw it away. So I just brought all of that into the game and realized that, okay, product management was where I belong, because yes, as a salesperson, you do stakeholder engagement. As a as a salesperson, you think about business impact of whatever product you're working on. And the interesting thing was that even as a medical representative, I again volunteered to within my team to adopt a product that was managing. So although this was like a traditional product, like a medicinal product, there are some things that you do, some initiatives, some product testing, all of those things. So I realized that I had actually done all the things, or not maybe all the things, but some of the things, right, that is required of a product manager. So it's about being able to represent my experiences in that way, so that whoever is on the other side of the table gets to see the value I can bring, you know, to their team. So putting all of that together, I also looked out for the gaps that I had. And the gaps that I had was that I never worked with a tech team in terms of working directly with a tech team. I had never, you know, built a tech product. Like, I have not done any wireframing, you know, user research in the context of technology and all of that. So I became very conscious of that bit of things. And also, I read a lot of job descriptions. I engaged with a product, like product managers. The first of which was Charles Wattenberg. He's my mentor. And he's currently working. He was working at Microsoft by then, but he's not currently working with Netflix. And so I was able to gather all these experiences, know what I could bring to the table, know where the gaps are at. And that gap bit, bridging the gap, was where Mandy came in. Because I told myself that if I was going to bridge my gap with regards to building a tech product, working with engineers, working with designers, understanding the product management context in the tech industry, then I was going to do it the dirty way, like build an actual product. So it kicked off from there. And that's how I would say I sort of built these set of skills that would help me in functioning as a product manager. Now, I had to give this background because then someone would think, okay, you just, you know, you just decided to do a transition and then that was it. Right? But getting them to know that phase of being self-aware, knowing your skills, got to bridge them. So currently in my day-to-day work, again, it involves engaging with multiple business stakeholders, understanding their core needs. Sometimes the stakeholders may not even know what their core needs are. So
we have
to use smart questioning to drill deep into what exactly they want done and seeing how well you can meet them, right, in the process. And the most part of my work too involves a lot of operational teams. So in some cases, whatever you are building would involve influencing operational teams to also make changes to their processes, which is very difficult, right? it's quite difficult. And I find myself in that unique, challenging position where I get to learn influencing people on a day-to-day basis. Beyond that, being able to use data, right? So at the end of the day, when you engage users, users are going to say one thing when you observe them, you observe them doing some other things. And when you look at the data, sometimes you see the data telling you some other thing. So right. It's important that, I mean, it's not just about engaging them, but also paying attention to the metrics and using that to make certain decisions, calling shots on what you have to build and what you have to hold on with, because you don't have a lot of resources in terms of engineering time to build these products for your team or for your company. So top of the list, I would say stakeholder engagement, understanding business impact, leveraging metrics as well. Also the influence bit as well, being able to influence your team. That's generally working with the engineers, the designers, the data analysts, the data scientists, depending on how big your team is. And also even outside that, like the business stakeholders as a whole, being able to influence them and carry them along. And then there's a bit about strategy, like focusing on what their vision is, right? The long-term goal for whatever product you are building and how that fits within the organization's framework. All in all, it's a mixture of these competencies and being able to apply it in a technological context. And I think the same thing applies to any other role. If you are trying to transition from role A to role B, map out what unique, should I say, skills or unique competencies or domain expertise you can bring to the table and leverage that hard. Because, I mean, currently I'm working with Mpharma, which is a health tech company, and I'm the only pharmacist on the product. Yeah, so I would be able to bring certain unique insights to the team, right, with regards to what's happening in the pharmaceutical space and also how that impacts the products too as well.
Yeah. Wow, I like that. I think I always keep saying that people who want to always get into data science, for example, but then have a domain, you know, like some domain expertise are at a higher chance of excelling than, you know, the traditional people who just go and read data science in school and then have to now go and learn about the domain on the job. So I really like that. Clearly, I can tell that you love your job. You enjoy your job. But just tell us, you know, maybe your top three, like the top three things you really enjoy about your job.
Top three things.
Yes, as a product manager.
Being on the part of the user. So it's more like you're advocating for this group of people who need their problem solved, right? So more like being in that advocacy position I find it to be, it's more like you've been trusted with this, you know, whole role or task to get something done, and then you just get it done. So I think that level of responsibility is something that I like. And secondly, being able to build influence. And for me, it's more around, I love to work in roles where whatever skills I'm building is also applicable to real life. And that was even one of the reasons I also decided to go into sales, because then everything is really selling. So building that level of, getting the chance to build that level of influence, okay, where you are able to get a stakeholder from point A to point B, and then that feeds into the overall success of the product. For me, it gives me a personal high. It's something that I like. Like, if I'm able to get someone to understand my point of view, and it's not always about, you know, getting them to understand your point of view only, but also like understanding them and being empathetic to their needs and then meeting them wherever they are, right? That also counts. So I decided to bring in that context. And lastly would be just getting the chance to innovate, right? The chance to bring an idea to life. So you just think of an idea, one time is just a thought, moment. It's something tangible, something interactive that you can sort of work with, right? That in itself, it makes me feel like a creator, right?
Right, and it makes me feel like Bezos.
You know, it makes me feel like Bezos. It feels really good, right? It feels really good being able to see something from an idea to implementation. It feels really good. So I would say these are the top three things that I enjoy about my role, being an advocate, building influence, getting that high, and also moving something from idea to solution.
Right. So those are the highs, right? Tell me some of, you know, the things that shocked you the most from, for like when you were transitioning from pharmacy to product manager, maybe your top three as well. What were like the top three major things that shocked you when you made that transition?
Shockers. People will tell you, oh, transferable skills lack and all of that, but that's the sense. I mean, I was a career coach, so I'd seen a lot of this, but this one was quite drastic. It's not every role that you get your transferable skill working. There's still some level of skill you'd have to build depending on the seniority of the role, right? And there's some level of responsibility on you, right? People will tell you transferable skills work, and that's true, right? And also false at the same time. And the reason is that you have to be very true to yourself, depending on the role you are getting into, depending on the industry, and depending on the level of responsibility. You may use transferable skills fully or not. And there are cases where you have to build domain knowledge before you're able to now attach that to your transferable skills, right? Then get things done. And that's one thing that a lot of people have to be real about, right? That's one thing a lot of people have to be real about. And secondly, one other thing that shocked me was also about how hard it was going to be to break into product management. So it's important to understand the probability of success when you are thinking about transitioning. So it's not about, yes, you want this role, but the idea is, in your geographical context, is that role prioritized? I'll give you a perfect example. When you look at the various roles that you can break into, software engineering is relatively easier to break into compared to cybersecurity, right?
Yeah.
The cybersecurity posture in Ghana, in Africa in general, is like a preventative technique. And we are used to doing a lot of creative work, right? Let the thing happen and then we'll take care of it. So you would explain to a lot of businesses why cybersecurity is important and they may not pay attention to you. But then the next moment, they are looking forward to getting a software engineer to build a website for them. So it's important to understand this context. And it's not a way to discourage you, no. It's just a way to adjust the expectations. So for me, I discovered that, in a regular tech team, a product manager is... the ratio between product managers and software engineers is between 1:3 to 1:8, depending on the team and what they are working on. So what that means is that whilst maybe a tech team would a squad would require maybe 5 engineers, or 4 engineers, they require just 1 product manager, right? And that means that, yes, you have to put in a lot of work to get there. And you can start off, you don't necessarily have to even join an established company. You can start off anywhere, but then it's just relatively harder to break into product management as compared to a role like software engineering. So that was also one other shocker for me. And then the last one, how to sit this one out?
Don't worry, that's
funny. The thing is, I mostly have my expectations well managed, right? So I've gotten to a point where things do not shock me anymore.
shock you. I feel you. Now I'm gonna just throw this question at you. You know, you can choose to answer or not answer, maybe for personal reasons, but I know why I'm deliberately asking you this question.
Go ahead.
Would you ever go back to pharmacy to become like a full-time pharmacist? Do you ever see yourself becoming a full-time pharmacist in the nearby future?
No, I don't see myself practicing pharmacy.
Okay.
In the near future. But I see myself influencing pharmacy practice. So the end goal, I mean, as a product manager, they'll tell you to focus on the solution, right? The how, leave the how to the engineers, don't say. Not only leave the how to the engineers, but think about the what, right? And then the why. Great. So it's more like, okay, how do I contribute to a better pharmacy profession? How do I contribute to enhancing access to medication, access to medical information? And being in the position as a product manager means that I get to build tools, I get to build products, I get to build solutions that can help with bridging gaps that exist in healthcare systems. And for me, I believe that if I'm able to do that, then I'm still able to contribute to the pharmacy profession without necessarily practicing. So yes, I don't see myself practicing even in sales, even in community pharmacy, hospital pharmacy practice. I don't see myself practicing, but I see myself building systems, tools, and processes that could streamline things, make the work more enjoyable and fun. And I think that can impact things at scale, right? And that's where my high is.
Nice. I like that. I think for someone to be in a to have come from a different industry, but still, you know, have that kind of perspective towards the industry that formed most of the skills that you have now, I think it's quite an impressive thing. And shout out to you for that. I want you in the, I know you're a career, you know, expert, you know, you teach people a lot about, you know, personal branding, CV, cover letter, all that. I've actually been on one of his sessions and it's been very beneficial. I haven't applied all the things just yet, but the little experience I had on that call made me look at my career in a different way. I want you, you know, in the shortest possible time, give an advice to someone who is thinking about this transition. You know, maybe your top five points or the top five pieces of advice you will give to someone who is thinking about transitioning, whether the person is a pharmacist like yourself or the person is an engineer or even a techie that is even thinking about how to even come into pharmacy, whichever way, you know, just, you know, give some form of, you know, advice to any person listening who wants to make a huge transition.
Okay. More like a transition playbook. It goes down to some of the concept that I shared earlier. Think about career capital, right? So in terms of career capital, don't throw away some of your old experiences. When you are transitioning into a role, don't focus on just the role. Think about the type of industry or sub-industry. So even in the tech space, there's health tech, there's ed tech, there's food tech, there's whatever tech, right? So think about how some of the things that you've done in the past, every experience counts. So some of the things that you've done in the past can feed into your next endeavor, right? So in my case, the options for me was HR tech because I had gone into recruitment, I've done career coaching. So anything of that sort was going to work. Health tech because I was a pharmacist and I am still a pharmacist. Or social media tech because in the past I've done social media marketing and management for like certain organizations, including the Ministry of Gender. That was like way back in 2016-ish. So being able to bring those things together would help you craft that unique value proposition. The second one, I think a lot of people lose focus on that, which is informational interviews. So you have to gather information. I always tell myself and even the team at CareerView that it's not permissible, even our clients, it's not permissible to repeat the mistakes that someone else has repeated. And on top of that, if it's a common mistake that everyone repeats. And the only way you find out these mistakes is when you have informational interviews with people. So informational interviews are basically talking to people who are a step or two ahead of you and asking them what they did wrong, what they did right, you know, all those kind of questions, what things you need to learn and all of that. And they will give you distilled insights because they've been through it, they've been in your path, and then they're able to give you those insights. So informational interviews are super, super important. Like, it's something that you can't do without. I did about 5 informational interviews, if I remember. And one way to know whether you've got into a saturation point is when you talk to people, these same people, and you realize that the information you are hearing is the same thing over and over again. Then at that point, you realize that that's a saturation point. You've been able to gather much information. But as you talk to different people, you realize that there's always some new information popping up. Yeah. Then you've not really popped up things. You need to keep going. Okay? So that's another bit. The third bit, job descriptions. Like, read job descriptions like crazy. And that's particularly if you are doing a transition within the 9-to-5 space. I'm not sure if you are doing a transition from tech to farming. You just have to talk to a farmer, right? You have to talk to a lot of farmers.
Literally.
If you are moving from somewhere else into tech, then you'd want to talk, you'd want to read job descriptions, right? And reading job descriptions involve like going to actual company website. You're not going there to apply, though. You are going there to understand what the role is about. Sometimes you might think that, okay, this role is about XYZ. You go and read job descriptions and it gives you a different level of clarity. And for me, how I lay it is that because you want to get people to take you seriously when you engage them in informational interviews, you'd want to read your job descriptions first. Okay, so go through job descriptions like 10 a week or 10 every 2 weeks. You can decide to do one job description every weekday. Try to understand the job description. And how you're going through this is that you're thinking about, okay, when I read this job description, when I take a look at the roles and responsibilities section, which of these things do I have no knowledge of, right? That's like your red band. Which of these things do I have knowledge of, but I have not applied it yet? So this includes your transferable, some of your transferable skills. And then which of these do I have knowledge of, I have applied it, I've seen some form of success. So by banding the thing this way, you get to know what you have to learn in terms of your learning gaps, because you have no knowledge about some of the things, the red band. And then you also get to see what you need to apply, because 10% of learning actually goes through the certification, the courses and all of that. 70% of learning occurs when you apply them. 20% comes through mentorships. So you realize that the whole informational interviews and all of that is coming through that 20%, learning through other people's experience. And then the actual work is you doing the stuff. That's the 70%. So all the courses and stuff that you would learn will be 10%, right? So it's about being able to move things from I have knowledge in this to actually executing and then learning, learning from that process. So I would say that always do the job descriptions thing. Know where the gaps are. And then when you go into the informational interviews, you have something relevant. So if you go into an informational interview and you tell the person that, hey, for the past X weeks, I've been reading job descriptions and I've done this mapping, the person takes you more seriously because they feel like you're even investing more in your own development. And that's a very, very easy way to buy their commitment, right? So that's the third one. The fourth one is giving it time. So being patient, right, and giving it time. For me, I was able to buy myself time because I did my master's program and I was getting paid, right? If you are not in a position where you are focusing fully on the transition, then it means splitting attention between work and then your transition process, which is going to take a longer time, and you have to be very patient. If you find yourself in a position where you can cut down your budget drastically and then focus on leaving work, going through that transitionary phase, I've seen people who have done it in 6 months. It's possible. Then that means you are really going hard on that. So you are doing your skills building, you are doing your informational interviews, you are doing your application of the skills, you are doing all of those things all in one. Like you are really going hard at that. That becomes your full-time job, and that's something that's possible. So you can also look at that. But if you are combining it, then I would say patience. You need to give yourself time. You would see people transitioning. Like there are people that I even coached, right? And they transition into product marketing roles. But I had not done my transition yet because I understood where I was, what product management meant, the skill that you have to build. And for me, I was rooting for them throughout the process because I understand how this whole career journeys and transitions happen. So you need to give yourself time and celebrate with people when they achieve success. Let it be a signal that you can also do it. You just need to stay consistent. And then the last one will be push personal branding to the very last. So I've seen people who would want to transition and they get into this cycle of, oh, let me, you know, jump into branding myself, right? But the thing is, get your hands dirty first. Learn, build it, be competent. Now, I'm not saying that you should get God mode or whatever, but you should be able to do something when you're asked to occupy the role that you are trying to go into. And then at that point, that is when you can now think about going really hard on doing the very, you know, the personal branding bit of things. If you want to share your learning journey with people, then that's fine. Obviously, document it, where you can talk about what you're doing, but it's not cast in stone, right? It's not it's not something that is like a rule that you have to do. I mean, there were times that I'll post about from pharmacy to product, but I was still posting about career coaching and stuff, and I was able to break into the role. So it's really about, you know, being able to think about the personal branding, but don't see it as a path to just landing the job, but more like see it as, okay, you're sharing your journey and you're getting people to have visibility on what you're doing. And eventually that can snowball into you achieving that success with the transition. And one thing that I left out about the informational interviews is that whilst you're doing the informational interviews, you build genuine relationships with people and you become part of their network and they know what you are going through. So when an opportunity comes in their network and whatnot, they will be more willing to recommend you. And it's not because you got on a call with them and said, I need a job. But it's because you got on a call with them, you showed them how serious you are about your transition process. You took their tips. You went to apply it. You are giving them feedback in the process, right? And all of that feeds into the relationship building process. So if you want to really build networks, I would say one of the very best ways is doing informational interviews.
That's good.
Great. So those are the 5 pointers.
Yeah, and amazing ones. Listen, this is not only just, you know, talk about, you know, a transition, but we had a whole career coach, you know, get us, you know, to think holistically about this. I'm even learning I'm learning a lot of things myself, and I'm going to apply them to my career. Joel, just to conclude today's episode, I want you to, you know, just give us a little bit of, you know, a teaser on what you're looking forward to in terms of your career in the next, you know, few years. You're currently a product manager, maybe one will say, to add senior to it in the next year or two, or maybe to probably pivot again since you are in the habit of hopping from one thing to the other. I don't know, but, you know, just, you know, let's just speak, you know, like the way Twitter says, tweet into existence. What are you looking forward to as a career in the next few years?
Okay. I'm actually a senior product manager now.
Oh, apologies. I retract. He is already a senior product manager.
Relax.
Okay, so right now that you are the senior position, project a little bit. What does the next phase look like for you?
Okay, so I've been in this dilemma of wanting to be an individual contributor or wanting to be in a managerial space. And I would say, like, in terms of managing people and, you know, engaging people, driving them towards growth, I've been doing that with Career Hill for some time. So I see myself going along the individual contributor route. But also, there's an interesting thing that happened to me. So prior to starting my master's, I got serious with this whole career coaching business. And I started defining process, building processes, automating some things, arranging to get our websites done, and all of that, right? And throughout that process, right, I discovered that maybe I would become an entrepreneur because I was just doing this on a solo basis. And I never saw myself as an entrepreneur, right? And to be honest, it was just 9 to 5 and living it. And so between 2020 to like, I think last month, I've gone on this whole entrepreneurial drive. And I love that product management sort of encourages that, right? It helps you to build that particular competency of being in charge of a product, thinking about it, business, right. Calling shots, and all of that. Although, like it happens in a particular organizational context. And I did a personality test, and I realized that I moved from being an advocate. That was my personality trait. I did this 16 personality things. It's something that you can check out, 16personalities.com. So I realized that I've moved from being an advocate to being an entrepreneur. And it tells you very much about the whole idea of personality tests, right? You don't take personality tests because you just want to know who you are, but it's more about you get to change some of the things that you don't like about your personality or you feel can be improved about your personality. So what I'm driving at is that I see myself gearing towards being an entrepreneur. I'm not sure as to when that would happen, but it's something that would happen, and I look forward to that phase of my life too as well. So beyond, you know, wanting to be an IC, so moving into maybe a product, a principal product manager route, I'm also considering like the bit of going full-time entrepreneurship. It's quite scary, but that could be something that I'll look at getting into in the long term.
Well, you already have you know, a good tag attached to you, Bezos, and I believe it's already an encouragement for you to know that you can do it. But Joel, I just want to say a big thank you. Thank you for joining today's podcast. More importantly, thank you for also, you know, starting Career Wheel and, you know, being willing to, you know, share the things you've learned and, you know, being very intentional about, you know, supporting people in their journey. Some of the things you've done, either maybe paid for or, you know, free, but, you know, that constant, you know, effort to get people to be more intentional about their careers is very, very great. And I'm looking forward to seeing you, you know, so higher in your career, and I'll be at the top as well. So I'll be cheering you on.
Absolutely. And thanks for inviting me on this amazing platform. And I believe that my journey is just a fragment of what could happen, right? There are so many possibilities. And I believe that this just serves as an inspiration for several other people who are in my shoes, like where I was like 2 years ago, a year ago. And this should inspire them to reach greater heights. And I hope they ask to use and share some feedback as well.
We're looking forward to that. So you guys, you know, get into the comment section, share some feedback, and let's get interactive. Thank you so much, Joel, for coming.
Yeah, Raymond, and one last thing. I mean, still Mandy is on. So I just want to chip it in that people can join the Mandy waitlist. Mandy is mandy.mycareerwheel.com. So you can join our wait list. It's a career, we are building a career operating system for career graduates. But the interesting thing about career transition is that you tend to mimic the position of an early career graduate, because you have these skills which are transferable, and then you have this thing that you're trying to break into and all of that. So that's basically what we are working on. And if it goes full blown live, you would get access, early access to it as well. Currently, we are in public.
Perfect. Don't worry, I will keep the link in the description for anyone who wants to get to know more about Mandy. Defo. All right, so see you the next time.
Sure. Thanks so much. Have a nice day.
You're welcome, mate.
Bye.
For some, making a huge career transition can be smooth. For others, it can be a bumpy road. Regardless of where you find yourself, Joel reminds us that life is an ongoing adventure. Just like catching the perfect wave, sometimes we must take risks, work hard, and trust our instinct to seize new opportunities. Whether you're contemplating a career change, exploring new paths, or seeking inspiration, Joel's experiences show that determination and passion for learning can help you overcome any challenge. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the TechSep Podcast. See you in the next episode.